Welcome to the Pure Flow Yoga Podcast. Today, it's my honor to welcome a dear friend and inspiration, Emily Kusser of High Vibe Yoga, to the show. In our conversation today, we explore some very interesting topics. For example, we talk about spirituality for the female psyche and why it's really important to understand our cyclical nature for our spiritual and emotional well-being. We also talk about self-care, women's work, and we explore the taboo areas of sex, death, and wealth, and how they show up in the yoga world. So we really hope you enjoy our conversation today. Please feel free to leave comments, ask questions, or get in touch. And without further ado, please enjoy our conversation. So welcome to the Pure Flow Yoga Podcast. Today I'm coming at you from Uluwatu in Bali, where I'm here with Emily Kusser, the founder of High Vibe Yoga. Emily has spent a decade on teaching, research, and personal experience to create the highest level courses possible. She is a sincerely curious being about healing methodologies and spiritual systems, and she wholeheartedly investigates their practicality for everyday people with everyday lives. Emily has studied with master teachers around the world in Asia, Europe, and North America, and her work is deeply influenced by teachers Sally Kempton, Tara Judell, Layla Martin, Lauren Roche, Mark Whitwell, and the fields of classical tantra, hatha yoga, somatics, and integrated sexuality. Emily is dedicated to offering a fresh and honest approach to spirituality and has been living in Ubud, Bali for over 10 years. She teaches her courses internationally, and she's quite famous here locally because she was one of the main Yoga Barn teachers, which is a really famous yoga center here in Ubud. Emily, I am so excited to welcome you to the podcast.
Thank you, Francie. I'm so happy to be here.
So tell me, what are you passionate about sharing as a teacher, as a leader?
Well, that's changed a lot over time. And as of the past 3 or 4 years, I've gotten incredibly interested in women's health. And I've been teaching a lot of women's self-care. And that includes educating women, all types of women, about their bodies sexually. So sexual health and well-being, sexual anatomy, but also spirituality for the female psyche, which I felt in my own life and in my journey through teaching. I realized like women's psychology is kind of this other half of yoga and spirituality that's kind of left out. So I've been investigating that and teaching from that space for a while now.
That's so awesome. I feel that this self-care angle, this women's health, is kind of left out of this almost patriarchy of the yoga tradition. So that's really wonderful that you're bringing awareness to that now.
Thank you.
So how did you get started on your journey?
Well, with yoga. Mm-hmm. So yoga found me, I say. I didn't find it. Yoga came and found me when I really needed it. Mm. I had a pretty chaotic upbringing. And so the yoga helped me have a sense of order to the chaos. I left home when I was 17, lived in my car in LA, Venice Beach, and, you know, made money to go to college and worked in, you know, a kajillion different jobs, including au pair and working in yoga boutiques and yoga studios and bartending and all of these things. And through that, I had the thread of yoga carrying me through and kind of reordering my life. And then I found myself in Bali in my early 20s.
How did you end up here?
I had a dream, and it was a reoccurring dream every night that I was walking on a beach and holding a baby, and there was a man behind me. I could never see his face, but I was really happy in my dream. And in my real life, I was feeling a lot. There was a lot going on. I wasn't that happy in my life. And then what happened was I was at a dinner table and somebody said that they had been to Bali, and I knew that's where I was in my dream. And I was on a flight 2 weeks later. I sold everything and hopped on a flight.
Wow, and never looked back.
I never looked back, and the baby was symbolic of just a whole new life start.
Beautiful. Wow. And so you've gone on a really big journey in Bali. As I mentioned, you were a Yoga Barn teacher offering daily classes. And then when I first got to know you some years back, you had invited me to come and teach hula hooping on one of your retreats.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that really catalyzed a big part of my journey because I was so inspired by what you were doing. And I was like, Emily, how do I do this? And I remember you saying to me, just visualize your perfect retreat, visualize the schedule. When do people eat? What are you teaching them? What are you learning? So thank you so much, because now I've gone on and made that my life path. And so you've had a lot of steps along your journey. And I'm wondering, what kind of challenges have you come up against?
Well, that's a good question. Challenges. Well, challenges of having enough belief in myself at times. Like, I've invited some really big name teachers to come and teach on my trainings mm-hmm. and my programs. And each time I've gone through this stage of, am I good enough to invite this person? Am I worth it to invite this person in? This is someone I admire so much. So that's been a challenge, but I really overcome that challenge. I really feel like I generated a lot of, yeah, like I can do this, and if we're doing this work and these teachers are doing this work and I'm doing this work, we're doing it for everyone's well-being. And so I came to a stage of like seeing myself as an equal in that way. And other challenges, I think just personal dynamics in general, you know, like business is the greatest spiritual path there is,
Isn't it, I'd say.
Yeah. And I've been an entrepreneur for, you know, I've had my own business for 10 years now, pretty much, and High Vibe Yoga for 8. And so things like contracts and agreements, those, you know, that's the kind of thing that mm-hmm. I've found challenges and have had a really, amazing, helpful lessons in learning how to do that with integrity and dignity and stand up when I need to and listen when I need to.
Which again kind of comes back to that self-worth thing of just, you know, standing your ground and knowing your value and being able to communicate that with your friends and your peers and those that you respect above you.
Excellent communication, yeah, is what a lot of this has taught me with students, with inquiries with mm-hmm. faculty, with my own teachers and mentors and friends. Yeah, like I think communication is always it's a challenge everyone seems to face, and for me it's taught me the most.
Yeah, well,
and that shows up in contracts.
Yeah, awesome. That's great that you have that clarity. They say that, you know, our biggest challenges are where we have our biggest growth, and mm-hmm. you know, communication is so key. I think especially in this yoga world, as yoga teachers, people project onto us a lot that we've kind of surpassed this, you know, everyday human quality, and somehow we're meant to be above it and better than it, or we're claiming to be enlightened because we're teachers, but really we're just teaching what we need to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Word.
So you just mentioned that you bring a lot of incredible teachers onto your trainings, and I know that you've studied with master teachers around the world, and I'm just wondering, are there any tools or books that are really shaping you or that have really helped you along your journey that you can share with our listeners?
There's so many. I don't know how to choose. One of the most helpful as of recently is called Wild Power, which I think that you've been reading too, by Alexandra Pope.
Yeah.
And it's a book for women on how to live your life by your menstrual cycle. And that I think every woman should read, especially any woman who's in business and is still menstruating, because, oh my gosh, that is so helpful to start to understand that in every month, like, I'm going to be feeling this way at a certain time of the month and this way, and to notice my patterns in business, in relationship, in all of it. So that's been incredibly useful and helpful to me.
Mm. I'm just on that. I'm in my late 30s now and just beginning to learn about this and beginning to, awaken to this idea that, you know, there's different psychology related to different parts of the moon cycle, and we are lunar beings.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part of me that's angry that I didn't have this education before, and then there's a part of me that's like, okay, I really need to marinate in this and share it. And I guess this is one of the things that you're doing with your self-care trainings.
Yeah, definitely.
So important.
Definitely, because when I learned about that, amongst many other cyclical ways of living, seasonal ways of living, like this thing that we have in our female body, the cycles, is like, that's governing our whole experience of reality.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, to that book, Wild Power, is Alexander Pope is a genius and such a pioneer in women's health. So I really recommend, even men should read that
book,
that's men and women.
Yeah.
Such a great one.
Men are surrounded by women all the time.
they need this info. And I guess the other one is, it was just on the tip of my tongue. Vijnana Bhairava, the Radiant Sutras, the translation that Lauren Roche gives, and Lauren's a good friend of mine, is like such a juicy tantric text, and it really honors the masculine and feminine energies. I love it because it's really this poem, this erotic, seductive poem about one's relationship with the divine, but it reads as, you know, a beautiful way of meditation.
Mm.
112 different meditations on wonder and delight, really. And it's just super sexy.
Beautiful. I wonder if you would mind taking a moment and just talking a little bit about this tantra tradition and what it is, because I think there's a lot of confusion in our world about what this word tantra relates to, and you are saying it's sexy and things like that. So can you unpack that a little for us?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I don't know if tantra even has a one word answer, really, because I do feel like it's a nature-based teaching or philosophy. And you kind of have to get into it for a while to understand what it is. For me, what tantra means is to see that there is a oneness to everything, which sounds a little cliche, but it's non-dual, not two, meaning one.
Mm-hmm.
That and to me that means that everything is to some degree, everything is all right and everything's divine. All the things that I think I don't like about myself are divine, just as divine as the parts of myself that I do like. All the shitty things that are happening in the world that I could get really angry about and sometimes do, even in regards to women's rights and things like this. You know, Tantra would say there's a purpose, there's a meaning behind all of it, all of the things that really trigger us and the triggers themselves and all the things we take delight in. And to welcome all of it.
And would you recommend this Bhairavya Tantra as a good starting point for people wanting to learn more or to delve into Tantra?
Yeah, pick up that book. You mean the text? Pick it up and see what happens. And take time to savor the what you're reading. Take time to savor everything, in fact. Like, that is Tantra. It has to do also with the senses and how we perceive the world through our body. So it's like, whether something's filled with pleasure or pain, you know, can you be with it?
The eternal question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wonderful. So we'll check out those two books for sure. And who is inspiring you, or who do you consider your main influencers or teachers?
Well, one of them lives on this island. Her name's Robin Lim.
Oh, yeah.
Robin Lim, who owns the Natural Birthing Clinic here in Bali, has been one of my... I refer to her as one of my main teachers, even though I'm, you know, in the yoga world, and you could be asking me about people of the Tantra world and yoga world. But when I think of teachers, I think of Robin Lim because she's a midwife. She midwives thousands of babies' births and humans popping into this world, and like, you know, when I think of someone, when I look at someone and think of like guru energy, Robin has that. She's a magic magic woman, as well as some other women that we've got here on island.
Sure. And she won, I think, the CNN Person of the Year award a few years back.
She did, for her crisis work and just for having this clinic here in Bali, which Western, foreigners from all over the world come to be with her to birth, but also thousands of Indonesians and Balinese. So it's like a safe haven for birthing. And after so many years of spiritual investigation and going and being with teachers and all over the place, I really started to feel like the ones who work with birth and death are real. The people that are working with the dying and the being borns and the mothers are the real teachers. The stuff they have to do for that type of career is it humbles me.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and you can see in their eyes, you know, I call it like the lion's gaze. You can see 1,000 miles into their eyes because they've seen so much. And I don't see that I don't always see that. It's a rare and special thing.
This is something really beautiful that I've watched you evolve into with your career, is that, you know, you were an Anusara teacher and then an embodied flow teacher, and now you're really moving into these more taboo subjects, sexuality, death, money.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to hear a little bit about your journey with those, or whatever you want to share about those things.
Well, for a Scorpio rising, like, we dig and dig and dig and dig and don't stop digging.
Okay.
And there's just no stop because nothing satiates enough to, like... So I guess what I'm saying is I'm a seeker at heart. And I, you know, through all of the different career phases and seeking phases and everything, I think I am and have been getting down to what really matters in all of this. What are the big questions?
Mm.
What can I focus on that's really going to create a really great life for myself? But also, how can I be a teacher that's actually doing something that's useful for the people that are coming into contact with me as a teacher? And it's like the taboo things. For some reason, I started to feel that the things that are most taboo, like taboo in my own culture, in my family, and then noticing, because I've worked with so many people from all over the world,
mm-hmm.
Bali being one of the most diverse places to be doing group work. It's not just me and my country, it's everyone. So that these taboos, sex, death, and wealth are like really spiritually raw, powerful, and transformative subjects to get into that can create liberation for people and a lot more sanity as well.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Cool. So just back to the self-care. Mm-hmm. What are your main practices of self-care? Because I know you're traveling all over the world, offering your trainings, doing your seeking, being in workshops as a student as well, and I'm wondering, how do you stay balanced? How do you self-care?
I don't always.
Great, you're
right?
Human.
I'm human. I definitely don't always feel balanced, and I definitely struggle with self-care, which is why, like, it's why I started to offer it in the first place.
Right.
But I do know some of the things that work super well for me, and one of them is just to simply lay down.
Yeah.
Like, lay down on the ground. But what I do most often is a little bit of something called open mouth breathing, or gentle open mouth breathing, which stimulates my senses. And then I do any kind of movement that's born from that. So some people call that somatic movement, some call it nonlinear movement. I just call it movement. So those two things combined have been a shockingly powerful self-care practice for me that I can't hide from myself when I do that. It can really release a lot of things I've been hiding from.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we've really pedestalized busyness in our culture in this moment, just staying occupied all the time, and just to slow down and just be is such a challenge. It couldn't be more simple, but it's so hard.
I went through the stage of reading more about restorative yoga poses than actually practicing restorative yoga and having all the props to do that, and yet wanting to just read about the benefits instead. And I think that's something that's all across the board happening, especially with teachers.
Yeah, well, yeah, we want to refine ourselves so we can offer the best.
And intellectualizing rest instead of actually resting. So self-care is like a lifelong journey, and it's a fascinating one for me, and I see for a lot of people to be getting into right now.
So this open mouth breathing that you're talking about, is there any resource that you can point us to, or is it as simple as just opening our mouth and breathing?
I could point to lots of resources, but I really, my feeling is that your breath is your breath. I mean, it doesn't necessarily belong to us, but to open your mouth, lay down, relax, and breathe gently in and out through the mouth. Set a timer for like 10 minutes, try it out, play some really lovely music that you enjoy, and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Write to me, send me an email if you actually are listening and you do that, and you might be really surprised. It really can unwind and restore balance in the body-mind in a way that I haven't found other things to be able to.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is the Pure Flow Yoga Podcast, and I'm wondering, what does it mean for you to be in pure flow, or what does flow or pure flow mean to you?
Pure flow means to me that I'm not trying to effort, or I'm not efforting. I am leaning into universe. I'm leaning into spirit. Something's moving my arms, my legs, my words. I don't have to try. It's just happening, and I have a lot of trust in that. That's what pure flow feels like.
Yeah.
And usually I'm having fun. There's laughter. Like, pure flow involves a lot of laughter and calmness.
So I'm wondering, when you are not in a state of pure flow, when you are efforting a lot, how do you recognize and come back to the flow?
With self-care. So usually any of these self-care practices would get me back into flow, or checking in with my menstrual cycle awareness too, and just recognizing, hey, maybe this isn't a time where flow is gonna happen. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a time where my life is presenting something else. And I've been getting more and more honest with myself about that recently, of like, I don't think I can be in flow all the time, right now at least, until maybe there is some spiritual evolution that I'll reach at some point. But as far as I've, you know, been taught by my own life, like, I'm not in flow all the time.
It's that cycles thing, isn't it?
That cycles, phases, cycles, and seasons. And actually, I mean, maybe what will happen over time is that I surrender more and more into the cycles, and that will feel like flow no matter what, no matter like the pleasure or pain of the cycle.
Let's check in a couple years once we've like been sitting with this wild power stuff a little bit more. Yeah. Okay, so what is your vision for the future? Where are you heading? What do you want to offer? Is there a legacy that you want to leave?
Well, in the future, personally, I would love to have a dog to walk
so
a dog
ambitious.
Every day, right? I would love to grow a garden and learn how to grow my own food. Those are like personal things. As far as with my work and offerings, I would love to continue with what I'm doing, and at some point have this for men and women. And also, I see, and I'm even scared to say it right now, I see the traditions and the words of yoga and of tantra and of all of this kind of dropping away from my work and getting down to the most bare, naked, natural, like, nature-based teachings I can find that aren't attached to any kind of thing that someone needs to go and study. It's just like, this is what it is. But I don't know what that fully looks like yet, but I can feel it coming.
Yeah. Can I just ask you a little bit, what is the fear that's arising around that? What does it look like? What is it about?
Well, the fear is that I have a career and identity that's been built around these traditions. And also I trained my own mind. I trained myself in these traditions. So I feel like I've got a way of seeing the world. And when I let go of those things, my world reshapes. So it's a little scary.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yoga really is a living tradition. And I see that we want to look back on the 5,000-6,000 years of this tradition and really honor that. And sometimes we look at these texts and we just kind of see it as an authority. And then when we check in with the moment and all the new information and the new science and the new research and the new passions that we're following, it's evolving. Mm-hmm. And it is scary to think that, wow, maybe we have some information arising in this present moment that's going to change the course of how we move forward. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a complete...
And challenge what we know to be true.
Yeah. But isn't that what yoga is? It's like deconstructing all of our conditioning.
Yeah.
Even our conditioning around yoga.
Yeah.
That's that death thing.
Which is really uncomfortable.
Super uncomfortable.
For
change.
Anyone who's been living their life as a yogi or a yogini practitioner with deep interest and passion.
And I really have to say that one of the things I admire so much about you is your seeming courage to change and to try on new hats and to offer these taboo things and to step away from the yoga barn, which is a place where you are a celebrity in a sense, and now you're sort of talking about even stepping away from the words yoga and the words tantra. So thank you so much for your courage.
Thank you for recognizing that and seeing that. It feels really good to have that acknowledged.
Yeah, it's scary. Change is scary and it's inevitable. So do you have any tips for embracing more courage in our lives?
Do I have any tips? Just really trusting that change is all there is. There is just change. Yeah, actually there is a tip. If you look back over your whole life, like all the things you had when you were 6 and all the things you wanted when you were 6, you don't have and you don't want anymore. Like it just keeps happening. Like same thing for age 16. All that stuff, the boy you or girl you liked is probably irrelevant at this point. And the things you wanted to buy, the clothes you wanted to wear at that time, none of that is the same anymore. That just keeps happening. But in the moment, we think our reality is so like hard fixed, and that I'll always want this thing and I'll always have this person. But it's just like, with a little reflection, it's like, oh, that's not true. Like, not always gonna want this, and I'm not always going to have this. And that's refreshing. It's a little startling, but it's also gets the point across.
And sometimes when you get what you want, then you realize
you want something else now.
Yeah. And that must be a really interesting thing you explore when you talk about wealth with your students.
Yeah, I mean, me personally, I set my dream really high and I satisfied my own dreams, like to beyond what I thought I could, actually.
Wow.
But then I got there and I was like a little depressed, because then it was a feeling I had heard of before or had read of others experiencing in books of like, well, where... Oh, I thought this was going to satisfy me fully. Like, what? Now where? That's such a weird feeling to have.
Yeah, existential crisis.
Yeah, existential crisis in a way.
So what did you do?
Well, what did I do? I guess I started to explore other places of interest. I mean, but that's tough. Even my voice, my hesitation there was like, yeah, because then you start walking around this new space and looking for, walking around and kind of feeling new things out.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't have words for that as of yet.
Yeah, beautiful. So, any tips or suggestions you have for our listeners moving forward, whether that's on, you know, exploring self-care, or whether that's on embracing courage, or whether that's on sex, death, wealth, any of these things that you've spoken on, any advice you want to share, or life lessons? It's kind of open.
Yeah. Go spend time with your friends and your family. Take care, take rest. Surround yourself with good people, and also, in a way, keep your enemies close too.
Beautiful.
Those are the big things, the big things I can offer. Big little things.
Yeah, it's like the big simple things, the simple mm-hmm. things, the big questions. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Emily, you are so amazing and so inspiring. I so value you in my life.
Oh, thank you.
How can we find you? What are your upcoming offerings? Where can we learn more about what you're doing?
So my website's highvibeyoga.com, and I also have an Instagram and a Facebook for that. And I've got quite a few 3-day women's self-care trainings coming up in Europe, so you can find that on my calendar. And November at the Yoga Barn in Ubud, Bali, I have an advanced yoga training, and that's going to be a sex, death, and wealth informed yoga training. So if you're interested in what I've been talking about and in being with a faculty that really really has spent lifetimes exploring these subjects, then check it out.
Cool. Who are the faculty that you're inviting?
Kamini Desai and Andrea Boni will be holding 2 of the 3 modules.
Wonderful.
I'll be teaching about sex. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us here.
Yeah, thank you, Francie. And thanks for the invite.
Yeah, I look forward to following you for the rest of time. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the Pure Flow Yoga Podcast. We hope you loved our conversation and are going to come visit us again for more. If you liked it, please rate, like, and share this with your friends to help us keep spreading the love. And join us sometime if you can in Koh Phangan, Thailand, Bali, or beyond. We're offering retreats and trainings all around, and we'd love to have you. Have a beautiful day and look forward to welcoming you here again soon.